It's me. It's not Ben this week, and this is the Pocket Gamer podcast. Ben Maxwell has been the host the last few weeks, and he's off, unfortunately, at a sexually transmitted diseases clinic. I think it was, he said, wasn't it, Will?
Yeah. It's a bit of a shame, really. He said last week that he was going to have a friend round, and we didn't. Well, I mean, we kind of knew that was a euphemism, but it turned out that it was had some tragic consequences.
Unfortunately, tragic consequences for Ben Maxwell's penis. But I'm sure he'll be back next week, so everything will be better then. How are you, Will?
I'm all right.
Good. That's it? Just that? Just all right?
Yeah.
Tracy, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
See? Will, you can learn something from our American cousin.
Well, I'm just all right.
It's more honest. I suppose for us it's the end of the day, so maybe that explains it. Yes, anyway, it's been where was I last week? I was at Gamescom last week. That was quite exciting. I saw Galaxy on Fire 2.
What was the most exciting thing you saw? Was it Galaxy on Fire 2?
If I'm honest, it's probably a booth babe. Probably one of the booth babes. It's the most exciting thing I saw. And then Galaxy on Fire 2, in terms of games, that was good. It reminded me of Freelancer, which I guess is the point, and Frontier.
It looks good, doesn't it? It looks surprisingly good. Did you see it on iPad or iPhone?
So on an iPad. So the graphics are great. Yeah, it's very, you know, spacey and lots of really picturesque backdrops and stuff like that and nice explosions. It's got this thing. Remember when they remastered Star Wars? And what they added to the explosion of the Death Star was this kind of disc that came out. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I was always confused by it. But I had a friend who was doing physics at the time at uni, and he said, "Oh, it's really good because they've got this physics, they've got this disc thing, which is what would actually happen." Anyway, Galaxy on Fire has got those, and I need someone to explain to me why, if something explodes in space, a disc flies out.
The issue for me with all these things is from a games program I saw on the TV about 10-15 years ago, where they got a space expert in to talk about Wing Commander 4 and talk about, like, the most revolutionary graphics in space combat games, because it was a big genre back then. And the scientist just basically went, "Yeah, well, you wouldn't hear anything in space. You wouldn't get any flames out of the back of the ship because there's no oxygen to burn." So after that, I've looked at every single sci-fi since then and gone, "Yeah, you wouldn't get that.
Yeah. This is all bollocks." there's a book, isn't there? There's a book called The Science of Star Trek or something. Which maybe if I liked Star Trek, I think you would have read it by now. Oh, yeah. So that's that, I imagine, explains it all. Galaxy on Fire 2, yes, it's definitely something to get excited about. It's going to be very big. It's got like 100 planets in each of the planets, as well, and an associated space station. And each of those has a few missions in it. So I think it's going to be quite a big game with a big variety of different kinds of mission to do, like assassination and just delivering stuff to people and that kind of thing. And the amount of customization you can do as well is incredible. You can kind of augment your craft, various craft, with all kinds of guns and kind of mining tools and things. It looks like it's going to be a really deep and interesting game. So we'll look out for that. I also played Pro Evolution Soccer 11 on an iPhone. It's pretty good. Although I didn't play 10, so unfortunately I had nothing to compare it to in my mind. But that was fine. And there was a slightly interesting story. Rennie and I were walking around. I went with Alex Rennie. He's a marketing bod. And erstwhile podcast member. We went together and we were walking around one of the show halls and we spotted the Pro Evolution Soccer stand. We spotted a poster that said Pro Evolution Soccer 11 iPad, which was like a scoop, you know, because no one had said anything about it. So we took a photo and you know, I emailed it, or I think I wrote a story in the press room and put it up. And then later on we learned from a PR person that it's not coming to iPad. Like the poster was just wrong. and then the next day I was speaking to the producer of the game. And I told him about it, and I showed him a little photo, and he ran off to the PR people and said, "Well, why have you made this poster that says Pro Evolution Soccer 11 is coming to iPad when it isn't?" So that was an amusing anecdote from Gamescom. Anyway, the news.
news.
So it's been quite a busy week. Lots of game releases and announcements. Two yesterday on top of each other, two similar games, Dodonpachi Resurrection and R-Type. The new and the old of shooters. Tracy reviewed both last night in what must have been a fevered day of shoot 'em up reviewing.
My eyes are twitching still.
Yeah, but whenever you close your eyes, you just see explosions. And like Timothy McVeigh. And they both got a 7, didn't they? Was that too much?
Yes, they both got 7s.
Okay, so it's slightly, that's in a way, that's the most disappointing score, isn't it? Because it's neither, you know, it's not disappointing, it's not bad and it's not good, a 7. That's how I always feel about it.
It's good.
I mean, it is good. Like, whenever a PR person says, why has this got a 7? Obviously, I say, well, 7's good. But, you know, I suppose from R-Type, I wanted something more because I look back on that quite fondly from my youth. But no, 7 it is. I've had a play. We'll be talking about that later. And Will, you've been playing Dodonpachi on an iPad.
Yeah, I have, because they don't like second-gen iPod Touch users anymore.
So how does it look?
Yeah, it looks fine. I mean, the reason why I thought it would be okay was mainly because 2D sprites, when they're blown up, if they're detailed enough, they don't look too bad on the iPad anyway, from an iPhone game. It's just the 3D games look horrible. So I took a gamble, and yeah, they look okay. And I mean, there's a lot more extra screen estate to move your finger around, so that's always good. Obviously, it doesn't look like it's designed for the iPad because everything's slightly pixelated, but it's not terrible. You can still play it absolutely fine.
Yeah, just to make sure that the listeners know, it's only for iPhone and iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And you're just playing it
upscale.
With the upscaling. How are the controls? I mean, the controls on iPhone it's really good. They actually really nailed the control. How is it on iPad, given that? Because you said you have more space to maneuver your fingers. Does that impact the controls? Does it make it better, the same?
No, well, obviously, I haven't played it on the iPhone or iPod. But no, I mean, I'm not having any issues with it. The button, it's not... The weapon buttons and the, you know, bomb and laser and that, they're not all over the screen or anything. They're just all in about the same area. My hands are huge anyway. So I'm not having any issues with the controls at all. It's very one-to-one still. So yeah, if you don't have an iPhone 3GS or above, but you do have an iPad, then it's not that bad, I have to say.
Okay. So we can't do the comparison, I suppose, but I've got it for the iPhone. Is it worth syncing onto an iPad? I suppose we'll never know until I do it. Maybe I'll, maybe we can come back on that next week. And yes, an R-Type. Makes me sad. I was expecting such good things from R-Type. But I have to say, I completely agree with Tracy that it's just a bit thin somehow. It's just not quite right. Anyway, I'm going to talk more about that later. The eye control pad. That's a kind of... It's only for jailbroken devices, only for jailbroken iPhones, and it's a homebrew peripheral that you slot your iPhone into, and it's got a little D-pad and buttons, or directional pad, as Tracy would say, and buttons. And it's finally gone into production after 2 years of waiting and waiting to go into production and having redesigns, and also having a kind of controversial spat with Apple, because Apple patented a very similar design to the eye control pad. But I emailed the eye control pad guy, I forget his name, Keith something, I think. And he tells me that it's fine. The patent issue is over. Because the Apple patent kind of looked different from the eye control pad that's eventually come out. So there's no issue. And it's coming, and we're going to get a review unit, and we're going to review it soon. Do either of you have a jailbroken iPhone?
No.
Wearable Touch?
No.
Yeah. Neither do I. But to review this eye control pad, which we're going to do, because I think it looks like an interesting thing. To review it, I'm going to have to jailbreak my iPhone just for long enough to review it. and I'm sort of nervous about it. I'm a bit scared of jailbreaking. Have you ever done it?
Not to an iPhone.
I haven't done it.
Yeah, Mark does it. Maybe I'll get Mark to review it. Anyway, is that something either of you would be interested in? Will, would you be interested in a button peripheral for your iPhone?
I'm half tempted to say no, but I mean, physical buttons are always great and everything, but I don't really normally play the types of games which would actually benefit from having physical buttons. So,
I mean, would benefit R-Type.
Yeah, R-Type would, but I haven't got R-Type. You see, I didn't find R-Type's controls that bad. Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. But I don't know. It seems a bit bulky to me. It just seems to add like twice the size onto the phone, and I think that's kind of sticking something on which is well intended but isn't designed initially for the device you're putting on. So I'm not really for it. It looks cool, I've got to say that. It's a nice idea, but no.
Yeah. What about you, Tracy?
Yeah, I share the same sentiment. I'm generally not an accessories/peripherals gamer. Like, I like playing games that I can just, you know, it's like all those Wii accessories, you know, the tennis racket and the golf club. It's like, if I'm going to play on my Wii, I just want to play it with the remote. Yeah. And I think I feel the same way with iPhone. Like, I want to play touchscreen games or accelerometer games. I don't want to have to add something else to it. I mean, and it also means that I have to carry something else with me. So
that's the big problem. Yeah, that's the big problem for me. I actually think I do. I really miss having buttons on an iPhone. There are some games that an iPhone or iPod Touch are perfect for, obviously. Point and click adventure games, and driving games are pretty good. But other games like platform games and things like R-Type actually really do suffer, I think, quite badly from not having that kind of digital physical controller. Yeah. And so it sort of appeals to me, but then the key thing is that, like, who's going to carry around something? The whole point about iPhone gaming, what makes it good, is that it's, you've got it with you all the time, and it's portable. And if you have to carry something extra with it. It was the same with the Z-mote. Remember the Z-mote, which I think still exists in some form somewhere. And a lot of people got quite excited about it, but
it's a nice little accessory too. It's very well designed.
But who's going to carry around,
I think it hints at a larger question about when we look at game platforms, whether they're portable or console, that everybody wants their preferred platform to do everything. And that's not what game devices are about. Game devices are built and they excel at particular types of games, but no one device or console is ever going to be able to do everything perfectly. PC is really great at shooters. It'll always be better than a console. iPhone will always be better at flight games because of the accelerometer. It'll always beat out, you know, other devices. It'll always beat out PSP and DS because of that. But to say that iPhone has got to do platformers really, really well, otherwise it's crap, I think is kind of falsely defining what iPhone is really kind of all about.
You'd have to really love platformers to adopt that position, definitely. But there we are. The eye control pad is coming. Most of you probably won't buy it. I think the first run is 5,000, but I'm interested to see it. So we'll see. Check Pocket Gamer in about a month for the definitive review of the eye control pad. And all the pictures of the eye control pad in my hands will be kind of blurry because I'm shaking so much because I'm holding a jailbroken iPhone. worried that hackers are just streaming into it, like those robots
out
of
Matrix, grab
stealing my data. Yeah, stealing my identity. And that's Apple. Apple is having an event on the 1st of September. Initially, we thought it was going to be the 7th. There was a bit of a rumor. And it turns out it's going to be the 1st of September, which is in not very many days. What day is it? It's next Wednesday, so it's Thursday now. 6 days. 6 days away. And this is going to be the iPod Touch, I guess. Almost certainly. Tracy, is that? That's right, isn't it?
Seems a bit far-fetched to me.
A new iPod Touch.
That's never going to happen.
Rumor. Rumor alert. No, it probably will. And it'll have a retina display. Although I'm going to stop using the term retina display because as Zhao's friend Stephen Poole, the polymath, pointed out, every visible object could be described as a retina. You know, the glass I'm looking
because
at
because it's going into your eye. Yeah, exactly.
Because I can see it because light is bouncing it to the back of my retina. So it's kind of a stupid name for a technology. So, but it's easy. Retina display. The iPod Touch, yeah, the rumors are it's going to have a retina display. It's going to have one or two cameras. I never know. And it's almost certainly going to be announced in 6 days. And then you might want to buy one. Who knows? And where someone will be there. Someone from Pocket Gamer will be either in, well, in London, almost certainly in London, giving you the breaking news as it happens. But obviously only about the iPod Touch, because we don't
I
care about
they're available there. Next week, too.
Yeah. It's the way they work, Apple. We're releasing this, and it's open your drawer. See? There it is. That's how they work.
Behind your ear. Woo-hoo, it's an iPod Touch. Yeah. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
So let's just get on with the announcements. Katy Perry, Tap Tap, that's coming. Real Golf 2011 from Gameloft is coming. That's a kind of more, that's sort of Tiger Woods competitor. More on that later. NHL 2011, which is hockey on ice. Leg Breaker Soccer, the football game, I guess. Fantasy Star 2, that was quite exciting. Kind of retro Sega. Mm.
It was exciting
RPG.
Until I found out it wasn't available in the UK this morning. That was a disappointing moment, I have to say. I had my iPhone, or well, my iPod Touch all ready to download it.
See, and then your smile just dropped from your face.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So, is it coming? Did you find out what the next chapter in that particular story is?
I'll try and see if I can find out something, but nothing from what I found. I didn't see anything.
Damn them.
You may not be as excited when I talk about it later because I've been playing it.
Showing off.
yeah, thanks.
Gloating to Will. So that was announced this week, and it came out in the States, and also a game called Dead Runner, which I think is Distinctive Developments, which I'm going to be talking about later. It's a kind of... it's like a first-person cannibal. You're dodging trees.
It's a copy of Death Race 2000 on the Spectrum. That's what I got from it anyway, because you run up trees in first-person.
Yeah, it's also very similar to a free iPhone game right from the beginning of the App Store, and I forget the name. But in this game, it's just 3D blocks, and you're just going forward, and you just tilt the device to steer your way around the blocks. It's like that, but I can't remember the name, so it's a useless reference. Anyway, yes, and those are all the announcements and arrivals this week. I'm just going to check to see if anything else. Oh, yes, there is another one. This is one that's come up on the site since I wrote these show notes this morning. Spider-Man Total Mayhem. It's got a release date of September the 1st. Gameloft told us today. So that's quite exciting. That's in
very
6 days.
Excited about that game.
Yeah. So you saw it, and it was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's not gonna blow your mind. It's not like it's super original or anything, but it's just really good. It's like, it's a perfect end of summer action game because I think everybody's gonna. It looks really, the graphics are really nice, and the combat system is just very well done.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm gonna get that. I like Spider-Man. I've got a lot of time for him. He's vulnerable.
That's who you like.
I like that about superheroes generally. I like the fact that superheroes are, by and large, unhappy. That's the best thing about the whole superhero.
Spider-Man just
tradition.
Moans all the time. He mopes around. Spider-Man.
No, he's plucky. He's plucky. He keeps, you know, he likes a girl. She doesn't really notice him, but he keeps on plugging away. It's better than the bloody Hulk.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's just miserable all the time. won't hang around with anyone or anything in case he kills them. The rumor mine, then. Let's go to the rumor mine.
Rumor. Rumor.
Yes, the rumor mine. It's a good one this week, actually. When I chatted with the rumor miner this morning, the rumor miner, unfortunately, he'll be out by Christmas, hopefully. But yeah, I was able to communicate with him down this tube we've got going, and he told us that this is so good. Grim Fandango is being discussed at LucasArts.
Oh, imagine. Oh my God, that's really exciting.
I know. Hey, Mitchie. Yeah, that's the game I've been wanting really since I realized that, I guess since I played Secret of Monkey Island, and maybe before, maybe when I realized how good point-and-click adventure games were on iPhone, the very first thing I thought was, Grim Fandango, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, LucasArts, do it.
So it would complete the Holy Trinity, wouldn't it? You know, because you get Broken Sword, Monkey Island, and Grim Fandango. Those are the three big, you know, sort of old school adventure games.
Totally. And it would sell. I mean, it would definitely sell tons because everybody feels the same way about Grim Fandango. A lot of people say maybe it's the best ever point-and-click adventure game. So if you don't know, if you're listening and you don't know what it is, you play a skeleton, a death, this kind of skeletal chap who goes around with a scythe and he takes your soul. Well, you play one of them in the afterlife, and you work for a company that collects souls. You're a guy called Manny Calavera. And you're trying to earn money and the reason you're doing it is because in your life you've obviously done something wrong. It's only ever alluded to, but you're in the game. You're doing this. You're doing this kind of soul harvesting job to make enough money to get the train to the really good afterlife. and you meet this woman who seems really nice, and you fall in love with her, but you can't work out why she's in this kind of limbo place with you. You can't work out what she's done. It's really kind of, and then and there's this whole big conspiracy thing, and it's very interesting. But it's just so imaginative and
got a really
well
good
produced
design ethic as well. It's the It's the, what is it? Is it Mexican? Based on the Festival of the Dead, anyway, if I remember.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's just a really nice sort of design coming around, and it's sort of a 1950s sort of film noir style mixed with this sort of festival.
Yeah,
it's just
sort of Casablanca as well.
Yeah, Casablanca as well. Lots of influences from that. But
No, it's such a great game. What else has been happening? Tiger. Rumor miner is telling us that Tiger, the next Tiger Woods game on iPhone is delayed because of his divorce and the negative publicity and low console game sales that his affairs have brought about. Imagine that.
Do you actually think the console gamers didn't buy his game just purely because of that they go to the game shop, and then just as they're reaching out for the copy of the game they buy every year, then go, oh no, actually that's Tiger Woods, isn't it? Oh no,
I'll tell you what they do is they're just reaching out. They're in the shop and they're reaching out and they're thinking, oh, I really like golf games and this is probably the best golfing franchise. They go to the shop, they're reaching out and they look at the picture of Tiger Woods' face on the front cover, and they just hear in their heads, you are my fucking whore. Hold you down while I choke you. Or perhaps they hear, have you ever had a golden shower done to you? Just morbid curiosity.
Oh. They just didn't put the speaker.
These are the texts.
They shouldn't have put the speaker in the box, you see. This is one of the marketing problems of the game. Repeating those phrases.
They approached it.
Oh, my God.
Yes, so anyway, there's a delay. The game hasn't come out. Rich Brown, one of our guys, he almost every day he logs into Skype in the morning and says, is Tiger Woods here yet? He's a massive sports fan. Really loves, and he's really, really looking forward to this game. And so he's,
I gotta
just
say, it is pretty disappointing that it hasn't come out yet, because it really is actually the best golf series, best golfing game series.
Yeah. Well, maybe Game Loft can capitalize then.
Maybe Real Golf could step up to the tee and hit it for a eagle.
Birdie. Eagle, even better, but I believe. Rich is looking forward to that. He's yet another victim of Tiger's misbehavior. Tiger. Final Fantasy VI, the rumor miner is telling us. They're shouting up the tube that Final Fantasy VI on iPhone potentially this year. And it's going to be £5.99, which is $9.99. Why don't you guys take over here? Because I'm not familiar with the Final Fantasy series. Is VI a good one?
Yeah, VI is a good one. If I remember rightly, it's up there in my top 3, 4. I haven't played VI for about 5 or 6 years, so I can't remember it very well, but I remember enjoying it when I did.
There was a really good version of it that was put out on Game Boy Advance. There was a re-release that was done for PlayStation, which with extra cutscenes, cutscenes that weren't even there in the original version. But I actually thought that the GBA version was superior because the cartridge meant zero loading times. Because like on PlayStation, whenever you wanted to access your menu, the main, you know, like to look at your magic and equip things, there was always a slight delay because they had to read it off the disc. So I imagine that I'm hoping that if this does come out, then it'll be more like the GBA version because it'll be on, you know, it'll just be downloads. So it'll be on your device. So there'll be, won't be any loading times, but I love this guy. I love Final Fantasy VI. I think it's probably my favorite of the series. It's just really good. It's just really straightforward, has a lot of depth. It's very long, has a lot of characters. It's more of an ensemble cast. There's not really one main character. So you get a lot of flavor from all these different personalities.
It's going to be a lot better than Final Fantasy 1 and 2. That's for sure.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and there's more on the way because remember Square announced at E3 that they're doing, they're releasing Secret of Mana.
I haven't.
So my question is, what else do they have in the pipeline? Are they going to do a Chrono Trigger re-release? Are they going to
Chrono Trigger, that's my favorite Japanese RPG ever.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. See, one of my favorites is actually not a very good RPG. It was a Square RPG. It's called Secret of Evermore, where you played as this teenage kid that gets transported through time from this by using this hidden time machine that's in like an abandoned mansion next to the movie theater that he, because the start of the game is like you're exiting the Biloxi movie theater and your dog runs off into this mansion and you're transported back in time. And I don't know, it was kind of buggy. It was a Super Nintendo game, but I just really loved it because every time you would go through time, like you started in prehistory, and then you went through like the Roman era, and then there was a medieval castle stage, and then the future. Each time your dog would change form. So in the prehistoric time, he was kind of like a wolf. He was like really primal. And then during the, I can't remember what he was in Roman times, but in the medieval time, he was like this poodle. And in the future, he was a toaster.
I like the sound of that game. It sounds like Bill and Ted's, but with a dog. Sounds great. I like the premise. I'm always surprised by RPGs because I've got very little contact with them, actually. When I try and play an RPG, I get turned away very quickly. I always find them quite boring, and particularly with random battles, which to me feel like I'm trying to drink a cup of tea, and every so often someone just comes along and pushes me, and I spill a bit. That's annoying. That's annoying. I was trying to drink that. But to me, that's what random battles feel like. So because I've got very little contact with them, I always imagine RPGs as being these things with, you know, just dragons and stuff. And I'm always slightly surprised to hear about ones like Mass Effect or is it The World Ends With You?
Yeah.
Or the World Is.
No, The World Ends With You.
Yeah. When I hear about ones like that with kind of contemporary themes, which kind of sounds like The Secret of Evermore has, that sounds exciting.
So yeah, I think you'd like it because it doesn't have random battles. It's like Chrono Trigger in that you see the enemies on the screen,
right?
You know, Chrono Trigger is really good. And it doesn't, and you battle them right there. So
I like the fact that you can change I love the fact that in Chrono Trigger you can play through the game once and fight the big boss guy at the end, and then you can go back into the game of your characters, who can then at any point during the plot go and fight the big boss, which then changes time because you didn't do certain events that you would have done if you'd have played through the full game. It's really good. So you can change the actual future events or change past events by completing the game earlier than you should have.
we should do an RPG wish list on the site.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I bet is happening right now at Square Enix. This is what I would put my money on. Is they want to see how Secret of Mana does. Because they, you know, Final Fantasy 1 and 2, those are very old games. You know, they did well, but they're not really indicative of what kind of the Super Nintendo era classics, how those would do, because they're going to charge more for them. So I think they're, and Secret of Mana was pretty popular. It's pretty well regarded among the titles that we're talking about, Chrono Trigger and such. I think if it does well, and I anticipate that it will, given that a lot of the Square Enix iPhone stuff has done really well, I think that will encourage them to do, you know, Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI. I just can't see how they can't do, you know, how they would not be enticed to do a iPhone version of Chrono Trigger. It's the most popular, you know, most well-regarded role-playing game of its time. Like, why would they not do that, but do something, you know, do an inferior, you know, relatively inferior game?
They could confuse everyone by releasing Chrono Cross instead.
Oh god.
that was such an in-joke. I've got no idea what you just said. But I've got another slight Gamescom started rumor about Square Enix, actually. Just to wrap us up, Tomb Raider, the Guardian of the Light, the XBLA game, could be coming to iPhone as well. But I couldn't get anyone to... I heard someone told me this. Someone said, I hear this is happening. I haven't been able to get anyone to confirm it since then. So it's still very much a rumor, but we could be seeing Tomb Raider, the Guardian of the Light on iPhone or iPad.
You know what? I think that would be a game I'd actually prefer to play on iPad.
Yeah.
But it'd be good. It's been getting good scores, hasn't it?
Yeah,
it's quite fun.
Right, so that's it. That's the rumors. We had a bonus rumor, so let's leave the rumor mine.
What we've been playing.
So we're out of the rumor mine, about which we said nothing inappropriate. So we're going to be talking about what we've been playing. Will, why don't you go first?
I've been playing Conquest. Again, this is another game I played last weekend, and I haven't really played it very much after that. It's a Risk game for the iPad. It was topping the charts for quite a while. I don't think it is now. I haven't checked. Because it was 59p, and for iPad games, that's pretty cheap. I mean, that is cheap. A similar game that did that was Air Attack HD, which also rocketed up to number one and hit the top grossing chart. So if you're a developer or a publisher, 59p is currently the price point to go for, and not because I want to save money. Conquest is a Risk clone where the iPad is the board. So rather than pass and play, you put it on the table and six players can all gather around the screen and take their own little portion and play Risk. It's quite sparsely presented. That sort of War Games look, but not quite as cool as War Games. So a bit like Dominion HD then. It's Risk. You can customize the rules. There's a few customization options. There's no difficulty levels for the bots, and they're not very good. Well, they're okay, but they're not exactly geniuses, so it's a little bit disappointing in that regard. And also there's no online multiplayer, which is it's nice that it has the all around the board multiplayer, but it would be nicer if they had online multiplayer, because I don't have five friends lying around, which I can pick up and goad them into a game of Risk. But yeah, it's pretty good. There's three maps. It's 59p at the moment. 7 out of 10. It's good.
Okay. Is it better or worse than Risk?
Well, it is Risk.
So it's exactly as good as Risk because it's Risk.
It is, yeah, it is Risk. You've not played Risk, have you?
No, I'm not a board game guy. Not really. But I guess you've played the EA Risk, have you?
I haven't played their iPhone version. I've played their Xbox Live one.
The iPad version's not out yet. Yeah.
Yeah, the iPad. It's not out on the iPad. The iPhone one, I mean, it looks like Risk. There's a problem with Risk is that
it's Risk.
You can't go too far away from Risk without possibly messing up what makes Risk good.
But yeah, these reviews tend to be feature centric.
Yeah, you know, precisely.
That's why Dominion HD got an 8, whereas Conquest got a 7, right? Because Dominion has online multiplayer, whereas Conquest doesn't.
Yeah, and I believe it has customizable AI as well now from an update. Well, at least it doesn't have cheating AI from an update. Mm-hmm. So because before apparently they cheated, but of course on the flip side, Conquest has around the board multiplayer, which is its feature. If you combined all three of those features together into one Risk game,
exactly,
and maybe tried to do a little bit more with the presentation. I know it's nice the sparse sort of thing, but it'd be nice if there was a choice to not just stare at a black screen. That would be an excellent game. Because Risk is
more maps. Good
game. Yeah, more maps. Yeah. Oh, there's that other one that's out on the iPad. Lux. I think it's LUX and something else.
Yeah.
Which has loads of maps. I might check that out at some point in the future. But yeah, so hopefully that one's got all the features. But yeah, it's Risk. Risk is a good base game to work from. So.
Good. Sounds like a bargain.
Yeah, it is at 59p, but it will go up soon. It's limited time.
Tracy, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot this week, but I'm just going to focus on Phantasy Star 2, which came out just recently on the US store. We'll have to check on that UK release, right, Will?
Yeah.
And before I get into how I feel about the game, I think it's important to recognize with Phantasy Star 2, with R-Type, with really any of these old games that we're taking a look at that are being re-released, that we're not looking at so much at the game play itself as we're considering the translation of the game to iPhone and iPod Touch. So I'm happy to comment about Phantasy Star 2 as a, as the game that the way it was designed, that's a distinct issue from how it plays on iPhone. I don't like it. I think Sega has been extraordinarily lazy in bringing it to iPhone and iPod Touch. As a game, I do like it. It's a, it's an RPG. It's a classic, sort of example of an RPG. It's very unique, but to play it now the way it's been handled on iPhone is extraordinarily disappointing. And let me explain why. What Sega has essentially done is they've taken their emulator and just shoved the game through the emulator and put it on iPhone. So there's been no modification whatsoever to make it work on the device. And that just doesn't sit well with me. And some things I know are very difficult to do when you're remaking a game for a touchscreen. I understand that, for example, it's a lot of work to completely redo the controls. It can be a lot of work. It can be very, costly to redo graphics, for example, especially on a game that old. So I understand that. What I don't understand, and this is why I think that the port is very lazy, is there's been no effort to make it accessible and playable as a portable game. It's an RPG. So, you may only have a minute or two to play, and then you need to put it away. but there's been no change to the save system to enable, you know, if you're in the middle of exploring the world or in the middle of an area that doesn't, that has, and the nearest save point is nowhere near where you're at in the game, you don't have any option. You don't have any option for saving your status right there. And that sort of feature, you know, if you look at the more recent the more recent role-playing games like Chaos Rings, for example, or even Final Fantasy, the 1 and 2, where there's kind of a flash save where you can save really anywhere at any point, that's what is necessary on a portable device. You need to be able to do that. And that simple, something as simple as that is just not there with Final Fantasy or Phantasy Star 2. And there are other problems too. I mean, it's a really old game, and so it feels, you know, by nature, it's going to feel somewhat clunky. And I recognize that, but it even feels worse on virtual controls. And I know that that's not necessarily a huge concern with a role-playing game like this, but it's really hard for me to escape that feeling that this just does not feel right. There's something not right about just having dumped this game through an emulator. I mean, and there's just also aesthetics, like the menus that Sega uses for its emulator are ugly. Like, it looks really cheap. And given that this is sort of a game that people have fond memories about, the way it's been handled is just really disappointing.
Sega. Always misbehaving. You know, the Sonic 4 nonsense with the downloadable levels. All the emulator games, really, so far, that have come from Sega onto...
The existence of Space Harrier 2. And Space Harrier.
Exactly. Why are they doing this?
I mean, is it clear... Do you understand, though, why... Like, have I made it clear...
Yeah, good game, bad port. Yeah, basically.
Right. Yeah. Or rather, just a money grabbing port.
They get caught. They'll read reviews I've written about some of these older games, and they get frustrated because they think I'm saying that the game is bad, and that's not necessarily the case. I think, you know, like R-Type, which you're going to discuss in a moment. My review has very little to do with the actual game design, and more about how EA and developer.emu has sort of handled it, right? But I think it's hard for some people to make that distinction.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is difficult when covering these kind of re-released games, especially because they're on completely different platforms, to separate criticism of the game itself from criticism of the version that you're playing. But I suppose it's just what matters more, what's more important. The fact is that if a game is developed for another platform and then ported to the platform you're playing on, I mean, you could say, well, it's irrelevant, it doesn't matter what it was like on other platforms, because, you know, I'm an iPhone consumer, I don't really care about history, but I just want to know what it's like on this. But the fact is that if it's been ported badly, then that's worse. It's clearly much worse than if it had been developed for that platform. And you see a lot of that on iPhone. There's a lot of unsatisfactory games that are bad for that reason. Okay. So I'll move into R-Type then, on that note. I don't think it's quite so bad. But R-Type, yeah, I mean, it's... Well, it got 7. Doesn't sound like Phantasy Star is headed for that kind of level. But it the first thing to say about R-Type, I think, is that it's got immense staying power as a game for something that's quite simple. I mean, it's 8 levels. It's one of those games where if you could somehow turn off the baddies so that you just flew through the levels, you could do the whole thing in 15 minutes, probably. But it'll actually take you several lifetimes to actually complete it with the baddies, because they're so difficult, and that's one of the things R-Type's known for. But what's really good about it, I think, is the kind of the music and the design overall, and the... the gameplay, I think, is just really, apart from getting a bit too difficult later on, the gameplay is really perfectly handled, I think. And I think that's why people remember it so well. And I was actually struck playing this port, and struck recently. I went around to old Benny Maxwell's house when I was still living in Bristol, the B-Max, Betamax, and I went around to his house, and he'd got Zhao's some old console, I can't remember what it's called, PC engine it was, and he had R-Type on it, and I played R-Type, and it's probably 15 years since I played it last, and I just picked up the controller, and I got through the first two levels practically without being hit. It was just from memory, just I knew exactly where to put the ship at all times. I knew that, you know, at the end you get to the end, the boss of the first level, and you fire your little thing into his belly, then you go up into the corner and you just wait till he dies, and to the pixel I kind of, you sort of remember where to go, and these kind of games, it struck me, so good at making you concentrate. They really hone your concentration and your muscle memory. I think they really embed themselves, and R-Type is, it's probably one of the very few games that from that period, the kind of Sega Master System, even Spectrum era, that still survives and is playable, and I think is good. Okay, so that's the background. I think R-Type is a great franchise, and if you haven't played it and you just see you've just seen screenshots of it and you think, well, that just looks quite generic and it's old, so it's not going to be very good, that's wrong. Like, if you get a chance to play it on an Amiga emulator or a Mega Drive emulator, it genuinely is a great game. Somehow, I don't know quite know how, it's just the perfect mix of ingredients. So that's R-Type. On the iPhone, the problem is just the controls. Basically, you can sum it up that way. So there are three kinds of controls. There are touch, tilt and touch, and coin op, it just gives you a little, you kind of zoom back a little bit, so everything's a bit smaller, and you control a little joystick and two buttons at the bottom of the screen. So it makes everything a bit smaller, which is slightly frustrating, but it doesn't really affect your performance. I actually, of the three, I think coin op is the one I found the easiest to use. Not because I think it's best. I actually thought, when I knew that R-Type was coming, I thought obviously the touchscreen method is the obviously going to be the one to go for, but actually it's just not very well done, it's just not very well implemented, or at least not as it appears on my device. It seems very, you know, it's relative to, so the ship moves relative to where your finger is, but the problem is that say the ship is halfway up the screen and your thumb is three quarters up the screen, then you move your thumb to the edge of your iPhone, your ship is only two-thirds or three-quarters of the way up the screen. So you have to take your thumb off again to kind of redo it. So you're constantly taking your thumb off and on again from the screen to calibrate, to adjust. But whenever you do that, the ship just hovers upwards. So you're kind of, it's like you've got this helium-filled balloon, and every time you let go, it just drifts a bit into the air and you have to catch it again. And I just found it very, it just didn't seem very good. It didn't seem very responsive. That's the touch control scheme. Didn't like it. Tilt and touch, I'm not even going to talk about it. Rubbish. But for the reason that, and you pointed this out in the review, that it's, you in R-Type, you require such precision of movement to weave your way in a trance through the bullets that there's absolutely no way that you're ever going to be able to do that by tilting the device. It's a ridiculous notion.
Well, and there's levels, and I can think of, I think it's the second level or third, I can't remember which one, where you're fighting that worm boss.
Yeah.
And you think, and you die, I mean, you die the first time you reach it because you have no idea what you're supposed to do. But, and you think, there's no way that I'm supposed to, like, put my ship in between the curls of its body. And you're supposed to. Like, there's no way of surviving the battle unless you find the space in between where the worm is, like, you know, folding, you know, wrapping over itself. And if you try doing that with, I mean, it's hard enough doing it with a controller. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to tilt the device to do that.
Stupid. If you're playing this game, R-Type on an iPhone, you might as well go to a brain surgeon and get him to hack out the bit of your brain that perceives the tilt and touch option in this game, because
I had someone have a go at me on the preview for suggesting that the only way in which tilt and touch could be of any use is if you take a ton of diazepam basically kill your arms because it's just too sensitive. It just twitches around like a lunatic. I mean, yeah. but I someone had a go at me for that.
It's mental.
It is a rubbish control scheme. I had no idea why they would think that would be any good.
Well, I think it's kind of automatic, isn't it, these days? It's just, I think it's seen as an obligatory offering, but it really, really is pointless. So that leaves CoinOp. And the advantage of CoinOp is that, and the problem, the perennial problem with this kind of game on an iPhone is that your finger goes on the screen. So it always obscures a certain amount of the action. And depending on how frantic the game is, and how much, depending on two things, how frantic the game is and how much time you spend away from the bottom of the screen if it's a vertically scrolling shooter, or the left of the screen if it's a horizontally scrolling shooter, the amount of time you spend away from that area affects how badly it doesn't work. An R-type, so for example, Space Invaders is a game in which you're always across the bottom and you can't move higher than the bottom of the screen. Then Dodonpachi, which I played, is a game that actually works quite well if you stick roughly to the bottom of the screen. So you don't have to venture up too much. So actually controlling it on the screen isn't too bad. There's just something about how that game's made. It's just so many bullets flying everywhere. It tends not to be necessary. It's a bit more Space Invaders-like. It's not necessary to make your way too far up into the screen. Whereas R-Type, it really is necessary to make your way right into the screen, right into the middle of the screen. And the more you do that, the more if you're touching the screen, the more your thumb is obscuring everything. And if you're Will with his large hands, then that could be fatal to your ambitions.
I always put the borders on. Well, that's what I did with the preview, because you get the option to put the borders around the screen, which makes it even tinier, but it doesn't obscure quite so much.
Yeah. But then finally, there's the virtual pad, which is my favorite of them, but still just wasn't great. So there I am. I've just ripped into R-Type, but it's still a bit like Phantasy Star 2, I guess. The core of it is really good, but it's just not a great conversion. And there's an argument to say that it never could have been a good conversion on this device, although I think it could have been a bit better than it is. Unfortunately, slightly disappointing. And the other game I've been playing, which works a lot better, is Dead Runner, which I mentioned earlier. So that's it's a bit sort of haunting and dark and ghost filmy, and you're it's first person and you're just running through a wood and it's all kind of blacks and cobalt blues and grays, and you automatically move forward, and all you do is tilt your device left and right to change the direction you're going in, just to weave around the trees. Obviously, if you hit a tree, then that's the end of the level, but you can just glance off the trees, or you can run into bushes and all it does is slow you down a bit, but you don't die. And there are two modes. There is distance, which is you're just seeing how far you can get before you run straight into a tree, and then there's points, and in points you have to collect points, obviously, but then there are different colored kind of orbs that you pick up as you're running, and some of them, like purple, well, I think green ones are the no, I can't remember what the color the default ones are that just give you points, but then there is green, which is worth 3 and it speeds you up quite a lot, and then there are purple, they're worth 2 and they speed you up less so. But the faster you're going, obviously, the more chance you've got of running into a tree, but the more points you've got. And that's the way it works. It's very straightforward and simple, and it costs 59p. And I actually think it's really good. The aesthetic of it is something quite serious. It reminds me of that, was it called the Graveyard, or the Graveyard Visit or something? And it was that kind of art house game where this old woman just walks into a graveyard, and then sits on the bench,
Right. Yeah.
And then stands up and leaves again. It's just a kind of concept art house game. The look of it is quite similar to that, because the trees, because it's very basic, it's more or less silhouettes, and it looks quite authentic, and it's a bit of a haunting, it's kind of like a nightmare kind of scenario. You're just running through the woods thinking, oh, something's going to get me and I'm going to bang into a tree. A bit Blair Witchy.
It feels like I'm on a speeder bike from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, that never occurred to me. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It's very like that. So you're playing it now?
Yeah, I'm playing it. Well, it's like I'm having a developer commentary.
Yeah, I'm playing it now. So it's kind of like we're like soulmates.
We're connected through this game.
Seeing the same reality. Yeah. I recommend buying it. I think it's good. It's a very good kind of unusual, aesthetically unusual take on a typical casual iPhone game where you're just hunting high scores, basically. And I like it. I think it's good. It's good product. So buy it. And that's it. That's all the games we're playing. Do we have questions from readers?
Yeah.
That's the thing now, isn't it?
Yeah, we do.
Go on then. Let's hear them.
I'm just dodging a few trees. okay. Right. Yeah, we got two. We got two from Kevin, who did actually send us questions before, but something happened on our emails, I think. So I asked him to send it directly to my address, and it came through. So that's good. So, first question is, what happened to that spin-off from Space Miner, which I gather is Space Miner Blast, I think. Yeah, Space Miner Blast, which I don't think we actually covered, but there have been other sites which have reported this. And it was meant to come out in July, and it isn't out. As far as I'm aware, I have no information. So, I mean, I don't think Tracy has either. I think we're all in the dark about this game, basically.
Basically, we should have read that question before we started recording the podcast so we could have emailed the devs.
Yeah.
And asked them to have got an answer instead of just saying, I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, Kev, we're pretty much like...
The thing is...
Here's the answer. I can tell you what the answer is. It just got delayed. It's not a high-profile title. It's a free title. Within app purchasing. So, I mean, it's not the sort of title where everybody's been asking questions about it, where we, you know, there would be like some announcement that being in entertainment would be like, oh, it's no longer coming out in July, it's coming out in September. It'll probably come out in like September, maybe October. But it's a spin-off, so it's not that big of a release for them.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, but we'll email.
Sorry about that, guys. It was because the next question stuck in my head and I was trying to recreate it earlier, and then I managed to forget about the first one. The second question is, if we've noticed that iOS 4 multitasking doesn't seem to work, if I go to about the third page or more of my apps, the apps will just reload again, and he's using a third gen iPod Touch. So maybe that doesn't happen to your fancy iPhone 4s.
What can I say, Kevin? It seems to work fine for me. I haven't noticed the issue you're referring to, but I do have a fancy iPhone 4. So maybe it is just you.
I have another question as well. Last one, though. It's from a reader called Will Wilson. And he's asking the question, when will Konami bring out a decent Castlevania game? Or at least a proper Castlevania game for iPhone?
So not the Castlevania puzzle game, which was...
puzzle game. I mean, it was all right. You know, it's just that it was reminding me of it because like I was saying earlier, that on Xbox Live I got Symphony of the Night again. I've been playing through that, and I was thinking to myself, you know, all the Game Boy Advance games and even this game, that would be really good on the iPhone. But
it would be. I think, well, it's looking a little bit better since they've done Pro Evo.
Yeah.
Pro Evo represents, I think, a shift inside that company that they're actually taking iPhone seriously, that they actually think they can release full games. Because I think before Pro Evo, I think Konami, I don't think they took it very seriously. And that's why you had games like Metal Gear Solid Touch, which were quite frankly crap.
Mm.
You know, they're not fully featured games because they were approaching iPhone as just a phone and not a capable games machine. And I think now that they've seen Pro Evo do well, that the device is capable, I think they may be more open to it. But I would take that with a block of salt because, other than Pro Evo, you know, I know that Damien, who reviewed Castlevania Encore, really liked it. I didn't think it was all that special. And aside from Pro Evo and Castlevania, you know, two titles out of, I'd say, about a dozen, you know, their track record has not been very good on the App Store, you know, has not been good with iPhone games. So even if they were to say, yeah, we'll do a Castlevania game, we'll even port, you know, Aria of Sorrow, I would be cautiously optimistic about that, because, you know, that's not their specialty.
But you could see them on Windows phones. I know that's not what we're talking about in this podcast.
You could see them on Java phones.
Yeah,
Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a PS port.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think Microsoft's going to really be wooing everyone who's on XBLA.
Yeah,
Microsoft to be actively, well, they have been actively wooing them.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night was the game that made them break that really stupid limit on the arcade titles of like
200 megs. Yeah, that's right.
It was the game that actually they bent over backwards to accommodate it, and since then, it's the game that means that you could get Battlefield 1942 on the Xbox Live Arcade, essentially.
Really? It fought for our freedom. It fought and
yeah, basically,
didn't
yeah. Die. Well,
it survived.
Yeah. You never die.
Yeah, well, there we are. I've never played a Castlevania game.
You love it. You see, didn't you like Shadow Complex?
Yeah, I did. I love Shadow
Complex. It's exactly the same, but without guns.
Like Castlevania.
Yeah, I will. I'll play it at some point, but I've got, you know, so much to play, and every game takes about 15 hours, so it's not like, you know, I could be doing something constructive in that time. That's the dilemma of the gamer.
It's the eternal curse.
Yes,
curse exactly. Of the gamer.
Well, there we are on that slightly depressing note. I think we could probably sign off, and next week Ben Maxwell will almost certainly be back, so he'll be back in safe hands. Of the BMAX, as I like to call him. So it's it's been real. So it's go to Pocket Gamer and read the stories. Going to be some good stuff coming out next week. We've got the new iPod Touch. We'll be able to tell you all about that. And there's some game reviews coming, particularly Phantasy Star. So if you want to read about a game getting kicked for misbehaving, like a horrible alley dog, then tune in to Pocket Gamer and give us a rating on iTunes. And that's it. It's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.